great campus located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
This is
You Got Friend in Me.
Yep. By Claire and Dad.
By Claire and Dad.
You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from a nice warm bed, you just remember what your old pal said. Yeah, you got a friend in me. Girl, you got a friend in me.
This is the second verse.
I just thought that was kind of cute. I found You Got a Friend in Me, and it's a father and daughter doing a duet. I just thought that was really cute. It's on YouTube. So anyway, today we're here with Sheila Sutherland. She is a certified holistic life mastery coach, professional educator. We'll ask her some questions about being a professional educator, because there's a bit of a story behind that. She's a podcaster and founder of Reunite Your Purpose and creator of the Holistic Life Summit. She believes that your relationship with self is the foundation upon which everything in your life is built, and is on a mission to take the selfish out of self-care and self-love with her philosophy of seven pillars of the holistic life. And before I run out of breath trying to read, I'm actually going to say good morning, Sheila.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm glad that you're with us today.
Me too. I'm excited.
Yeah. So, now you have a wonderful story. So, about how you transformed your life and everything. Mm-hmm. So why don't we start there? Why don't you tell us a bit about your story and how you became so passionate about helping others in regards to their relationship with self?
Now, there are so many different ways I could go with this story. It depends how long do we have? Well, you know me, I'm a talker.
Yeah, I know you're a talker.
I'll give you the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, give me the Cliff Notes version, because we do two different versions, the half hour and the 1 hour. So I need to squish the whole story into the half hour.
Awesome. Well, I try to give you the highlights.
Okay.
For me, I'm one that subscribes to the belief that we end up teaching what we need to learn the most about ourselves. And I found that it was definitely the case for me in regards to self-care, self-love, and self-compassion. As I was always brought up to believe that everybody else's wants and needs came before my own. So I always felt guilty about expressing anything that I might want and need, so I learned not to. I learned to become very silent, and as a child, that thrust me into quite an adult role too soon. Mm-hmm. And so it caused me to feel, you know, very alone. I had to take care of everything by myself. I would never ask for help. And my identity became one of an overachieving perfectionist people pleaser. It's quite the mouthful, but it's some of our inner saboteurs that we can actually have. And through my life, I've kept, well, looking back, I can now see how these kept coming up and rearing their ugly heads, so to speak, throughout my life, you know, causing me to end up going through a divorce. I was then diagnosed with depression a couple of different times. I ended up, you know, feeling like I was living in a shell, you know, just a shell of a being, where the person that I was outside of my home was a completely different person when I came home, because I felt like my home was my only place where I could actually be me. Because I guess I felt that I had to have this facade to show the world that, you know, everything is just wonderful, and when it wasn't. And then I would say my life kind of came to a crashing halt when, at the end of 2010, I actually went through a fire. And the gentleman that lives in my condo building had actually set the building on fire above me. And it caused the complete destruction of my place. And it just, all of a sudden, I didn't have this safe place anymore. You know, because my home was my sanctuary, my security. And like I mentioned before, the only place that I felt that I could be me. And now I didn't have that. And that caused my whole body and being to just shut down. Right. And a result of that, like, I kind of went what I call my very dark place for about 6 months. And honestly, I don't even remember that time too much, because I disassociated from life. Like, I was in so much pain, you know, both emotional and physical pain. And I wasn't really sure what my next move was going to be. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, I ended up being diagnosed with PTSD. And then learning what that looked like, because, you know, when my doctor first told me that this is what I was going through, I was like, well, I can't have PTSD. That's only for the military, you know, because that's kind of what we've always heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Shell shock, right?
Exactly. You know, regular people can't have PTSD. And so I was trying to wrap my head around that, wrap around my head about all these new things, like, as I was angry at all the time and at the drop of a hat, and all this anxiety that I never had before. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to handle it. So I started searching, going, well, there's got to be somebody out there that can help me with this, and found there isn't a lot. There isn't a lot of help for people who have PTSD symptoms and they're trying to work through them. And I was getting very frustrated with that. So I figured I had to try to figure this out for myself. Mm-hmm. And then just to add another layer on top of all that, because of all of the stress of the fire, and then with everything going on with the PTSD symptoms, I then got diagnosed with a stress-based chronic illness. And I'm like, really? Does my body really need to go through anything more right now? And then it was just the readjusting and learning how to live life with this, because I didn't want those two diagnoses to be my life.
So when you were going through all this, was this before you became the holistic life coach, or were you the professional educator at that time?
I was a professional educator at that time. I was, I had been teaching in the high school classroom for over 10 years, teaching high school math and science. And that I was still in the classroom when the fire went down. And so that I had to, initially went on a stress leave, because I just, like you say, my body shut down. I just couldn't even comprehend, couldn't handle the slightest little bit of stress in my life. So I had ended up leaving my job. And then once the illness came in, and then, like you say, on top with the PTSD, because with all the symptoms, it caused me, well, under their words, caused me to be unreliable as an employee. You know, because I was dealing with chronic pain, I was dealing with chronic fatigue. Like you say, my anger triggers could happen at any time. And I'm like, I don't want this to be happening in the classroom. Mm. So that's what, you know, when I took the leave, and then it went on to end up being having to go off on disability.
Well, that's probably quite the interesting blow. How was that received among your social friends?
Oh, it was difficult. There was a mix of different reactions, mostly because I looked fine. Mm-hmm. You know, because when people hear that you're now on disability, they expect to be able to see something.
like a loss of a limb or something, right?
Exactly. Something that their mind can go, oh, okay, that's why you can't be working. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard for me because I always felt like I was trying to convince them. No, really, this is going on. Like, you don't want me in the classroom right now. But it's when you're talking about things like anxiety and anger triggers and depression, those things we can't put a physical idea around.
Right.
And then there's always so much of a kind of like this negative image that, you know, somehow has been perpetuated rather through media or whatever that, you know, people think, oh, well, you're just crazy. You know, it's all in your head. And so there was that part of me that was getting these messages from people. And then I started doubting myself. Right. Well, what is this that I'm going through? Maybe am I actually crazy? I don't know. And that caused me to start searching because, again, I didn't want to just accept that. Because in myself, in like what we call our own inner knowledge, I knew that wasn't right. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to take that label. And so during that time, it actually, I feel like I did lose friends. People drifted away because they just couldn't understand. And as much as I felt like I had to try to make them to understand, honestly, that's not my job. I asked people, the only thing I needed is that I just need love and support. And then there was people that I never expected that stepped up mm-hmm. and were there for me. And I was like, whoa, where did you come from? So it really did redefine friendships. It, you know, redefined a lot of relationships that I had in my life. And that wasn't easy.
Yeah.
There, you know, because even losing a relationship or a friendship of some sort, there's a mourning process. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of that I had to go through on top of it.
Yeah, we went through this in another show that grief comes along whenever something there's a big change. It doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily have to be a death. It just has to be something that changed, right?
Well, exactly. And I think that's another kind of this construct that we have is that grief is only about death. Mm-hmm. But it could be, like, see, a death of a job. So I went through that grief of leaving a profession that I loved and leaving the kids. Like, I felt so guilty of leaving the kids because they were my life.
Yeah.
You know, that's the reason I got up in the morning.
Yeah.
And then there was the, you know, the grief of losing friendships that I thought were going to be in my life forever. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest grief was losing the person that I was, you know, because I had this idea around me of, you know, my identity
right.
that I had built for myself, you know, for the, you know, my decades of life at that time. And then losing that, I didn't know who I was. I didn't really know, well, what's my next step? Where am I going to turn? Mm-hmm. So there was a whole other process that I had to go through in that.
Since you got to this point, right? Mm-hmm. You used another term that went along with PTSD, mm-hmm. and it was PTGS, I think it was.
Yes, well, PTG or PTGS. People, I've heard it both ways. I find PTG is the easiest.
Yeah. Okay.
To say, because I don't really consider it a syndrome, you know, because that's what the S stands for. But that's post-traumatic growth.
Right.
Okay, and this Sorry.
So is it sounds like you're leading into when you talk about growth. It's like you're changing, but you're trying to find the answers. That's part of growth, right? And that's why I'm bringing that part, that term in mm-hmm. at this point, because you're talking about finding the answers to your growth.
Definitely. And this is a term that actually it's only been recently that I've heard about it. But it was able to actually put a name to what I have been going through. Mm-hmm. So I was quite excited to actually find this term and actually to find out that it's been around. It was first coined by a couple of doctors back in 1995. But a lot of people don't know about it and they don't understand it. So this is kind of like another mission of mine is now to let people know about this side of things. And so what this is when a person goes through a life-changing trauma of some sort, there are some people, and they're still trying to figure out why this happens to some people and not for others. But instead of being stuck in, say, a lot of the negativity and darkness that a trauma can create, for some, it causes to propel them to move into another direction. And that's what it did for me. I started searching because I couldn't get the answers that I wanted. So I made it my mission to do it for myself. So I started, I just started on this search. I didn't even know what I was searching for. But I knew something was out there that I had to move towards. And the traumas that I went through actually became the catalyst towards this positive change. And the one thing that I have read in some of my research on this is that the first part of getting you towards the post-traumatic growth is having a lot of internal reflection.
Okay.
And this was definitely something that I was doing during all of this, is I would sit there and go, how did I get here? You know, what was my role in this? And I would literally spend, at that point in time, because I was off work, I would spend hours just kind of going back through things and looking like, and trying to put the pieces together of how did this all happen? And I started realizing that there was a lot of things in my life I needed to work on for myself.
Right.
So, you know, 'cause a lot of times we think that we look to the outside world for answers. You know, there's got to be answers out there. But when I was doing that, I actually realized that it was me that was the answer. I had to work on me. And then that was going to change my outside world.
Why is it that kind of makes sense? But most people intuitively think that that it should go the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it our society thinks that it should go the other way around when you're sitting here saying that it's like that we have this, that the change starts within us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I think one of the major reasons for that, and again, why it started, you know, I can't pinpoint, but we lose touch with the word that you just said there is our intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere along the line, and I think this happens for a good portion of people, we learn not to trust that inner knowledge that we have. And that causes us to look to the outside world. Well, there has to be somebody who knows more than me. I don't know anything about this. I don't know enough. Somebody else must. And, I'm going to take their advice. Because their advice must be better than mine. And this process caused me to look at it and kind of go, no, I need to look more at my intuition. Because I was one that felt that I didn't have it. I thought intuition was only for special people. You know, there was only those gifted ones that are, you know, that are on call intuitives, and they're, you know, they're the only ones out there that had this special gift. And I've come to realize that we all have it. Some of it, we all have it in different, I would say, levels,
mm-hmm.
but it's a practice of listening to it. And I found that through certain things, when I didn't listen to it, something bad usually happened. And when I did listen to it, something good usually happened. And I started seeing this pattern and in my reflection, and I'm like, oh, that's the ticket. So I really started paying attention to it. So when I would get a feeling about something or a certain thought about something would come into my head, I would sit there and I would stop instead of just kind of pushing it away. I would stop and look at, okay, what is this it's trying to say? And then I would look at it and go, okay, let's act upon it. And a lot of times it was just simple little things. Like there was, you know, if you don't mind me giving you an example, I had this thought came into my head this one day. It's like, I needed to go to this one store. And I'm like, oh, I'm tired. I don't want to deal with picking it. I can pick it up later. But I kept getting this feeling, no, you need to go pick up this one thing at the store now. Mm-hmm. I'm like, fine, I'll go. Just get it done, right? Because I just, you know, it's like you're having this internal argument with yourself. So I go in, I pick up whatever it was that I needed to pick up that day. And I'm in the grocery lineup. And there's this gentleman in front of me with this bouquet of flowers. And he looks at me and he's like, do you think she will like them? And I said, well, I think any woman would enjoy getting a bouquet of flowers for, you know, just because, you know, cause I asked him, was it a special occasion? And he's like, no, I just love her so much. I wanted to show her in some way. And we got into this conversation about their relationship and doing these little just because kind of things. And he looks at me and he goes, I am so happy I met you today. It's like, you've given me so much confidence in what I need to do to help make my relationship work.
Wow. Okay.
Even as saying that, I'm getting goosebumps right now.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to stop you there with your goosebumps, and we're going to play a couple ads, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Community Living Radio here on the NCRA Networks and broadcasting live from UBC CITR in Vancouver, 101.9 FM. Okay, we'll be right back.
Hey, did you know?
More than 4,500 Canadians are waiting for an organ transplant right now.
Right now. 4,500.
People are dying.
And you could save a life.
90% of Canadians say they're willing to donate their organs.
But only a few are registered.
So what are you waiting for?
Get registered.
It's easy and it's free.
Leave a legacy.
Be a hero.
Save a life.
Find out how to register today. Go to kidney.ca.
And we're back with Sheila Sutherland. You're listening to Community Living Radio here on NCRA Networks and broadcasting live from UBC CITR 101.9 FM. Why am I having difficulty saying that today? And Ben just got here into the studio. I guess he's running a little late, and he's going to join the conversation with us with Sheila. Okay. And Sheila, you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Good morning, Sheila.
Good morning, Ben.
How are you this morning?
I am awesome. How about yourself?
You know, I just running a little behind getting here with all the buses and all that, but
what, traffic in Vancouver? Come on, seriously.
It's always bad. I got an email like just not too long ago about from Michael regarding about you. Because I recognized your name, and I know that you're on Access TV, right?
I haven't been, actually.
Really?
You just gave me a good idea.
There you go. I would like to be, if you can make that, set that up.
Yeah. Awesome. No, we haven't had you on Access TV.
That'd be awesome, so, though.
Yeah. I will have to talk to our friends at Access TV about that. So...
Well, thank you for that, because that's awesome.
Yeah. So you were telling us a fantastic story, but it leads me to a question. How does a holistic life relate to one's relationship with self?
Well, that's a really great question, because I have found that, you know, the term holistic, there's two different words, and a lot of people don't realize that. What I wanted just to do a clarification, holistic with, when it's spelt with an H, you're talking about like the Ayurvedic and holistic medical ways of dealing with your body. which I wholeheartedly support. And that's actually, I've used so many of them to help me get through a lot of the things with my chronic illness. And, but that's not what I do. I do the philosophy of life, which is holistic with a W, of looking at your whole life. And that is in regards of looking at all the interrelationships of all the different aspects of your life and how they impact each other. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people like to compartmentalize their life. Well, this is my, you know, this is my spouse and my relationship with, you know, within my marriage or my partner. And, oh, this is my work or my career over on this side. And, oh, I'm going to have my children over in this compartment. But there's so much interrelation in regards to the different compartments that we need to realize how one affects another in regards to, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. There is this web of our life that creates it. So those four are the main basis of what I call the seven pillars of holistic life, is actually looking at those sections of our life and how you can nurture them. Because as humans, we get stuck and just looking at ourselves as just physical beings. Because again, like I mentioned before, it's what we see. And when we see something, it makes it easier for us to comprehend it. Mm-hmm. But when we're thinking about our emotional lives, our spiritual lives, and our mental lives, those are things that we can see. So a lot of times we kind of discount them. But the reality is when there's something going on in one of those three sections, it presents itself physically so that we can actually have that physical representation of it. But most people don't realize that that's what it is. You know, they'll have an illness come up and right away we try to find the Band-Aid to try to figure out what it is that's causing it, or we want to get rid of the symptoms, but we don't look at what the root cause is. And some people may not agree, but I'm one of these people that believe that any illness, any, you know, what we call dis-ease that's going on in our body has an emotional basis somewhere. Because science has now proven through a lot of work through Dr. Emoto's research, who is he's a Japanese researcher that unfortunately just passed away here a couple of years ago. But he has proven that the water within our cells has the ability to record emotion, and it stores it, you know, almost like, you know, the hard drive on your computer, is it stores every emotion that you experience. If you don't process it, it stays within your cells and then continues to come up as life goes on. And I see this as, you know, when we get those patterns in our life, you know, I keep meeting the same people, I keep getting into the same relationship with the same kind of person, and it never works out. When you start seeing these patterns coming up, that means that there's something way back when we haven't dealt with. And it usually has an emotional component around it. And I think I'm kind of going off the topic of your question, but...
maybe you are, Well, when we start to see these patterns and everything, what if we don't pay attention to them?
How I found in my own life is they just kept getting worse. Because I was one that, you know, kind of leading up to when the fire happened there at the end of 2010, I was getting, this pattern was really starting to ramp up. And what I call is kind of like poking the bear, where things kept coming up and I'd be like, oh, I'll just figure out how to wait. I'll just soldier through it. I'll just push it aside. Oh, I'll deal with this later. With our busy lives, that's our usual kind of default way of doing things. Oh, I don't need to deal with this right now. I'll get back to it. And we never do. And I was finding for me that they kept coming harder and faster. And I'm like, why are all these things keep happening? Like, they seem like they're very unrelated events, but they were all, the magnitude of them kept getting bigger. And I was just getting more ticked off at it, kind of going, why is all this happening? I'm working so hard here, and all these things keep knocking me off my plan. And I find that when you're not listening to them, when they're coming up like that, they're going to keep getting bigger until you have no choice but to listen. And for me, that was the fire. The rug got pulled out from under me at that point. I had to take notice. I had nothing left physically or, you know, mentally or emotionally, anything at that point. I had nothing left. Mm-hmm. So I had to start paying attention. So my wish for everybody is don't wait to get to that point. You know, you don't have to have this humongous life-changing event to happen before you start taking notice. The reality is that you look at anybody who has done a lot of great change in their life, they've all had that pivotal moment. But my thing is, why wait for that? If you are starting to see these patterns develop, stop, pay attention to them. There is a reason, but you need to figure out what that is.
Okay. So we're at the half hour point. So why don't you tell everybody how to get a hold of you and how to watch your podcasts and all that kind of stuff?
The best way to get a hold of me is off the website. So reigniteyourpurpose.com. I have all of my social media links on there. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, those are my big three where I am, or LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Definitely connect with me there, and definitely on the podcast. So the podcast is on iTunes, so you can connect there, or if you're Android, it's on the Podbean app, but you can also listen to it right directly from my website as well. And yeah, I would love to connect with everybody there.
Okay, so we're going to take a break at this point, and we'll be right back.
Awesome.
Tune in every Thursday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. for the Community Living Show. Join hosts Michael, Kelly, and friends every Thursday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM and streaming online at CITR.ca. Because you've got a friend in community living and CITR.
Tune in Sundays from 9 till 10 p.m. for bootlegs and B-sides with your host, Doran, for the finest in soul, dubstep, ghetto funk, and electro.
And we're back with Sheila.
Hello.
Hey, Sheila.
So we're continuing on with the 1 hour show here at Community Living Radio on CITR 101.9 FM. Why am I struggling with that?
He has a tongue twister there, Sheila.
Numbers are not your friend today.
No, and I'm a very avid speaker of the language of math, and I just, oh, well.
Sometimes anyway. It works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that's what it is. And that is one of those patterns for me that keeps popping back up again is physics and math. So,
math I love, physics not so much.
I'm the theoretical part, not so much the actual applied physics. It's like the theoretical part, and it's like that. Me and that are friends, but applied is like. There's too many derivations sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah, that was not a part that I enjoyed teaching when I was in the classroom.
Yeah. So, anyway, we were talking about if you don't pay attention to the patterns, what could happen. And for you, it was a fire.
Yes.
Literally, everything went poof up in smoke. What is the biggest challenge that you see people have when they first start working with their self-care and self-love?
I think the biggest challenge is that, well, one, we're never taught how to do that. We just aren't. There's never any point in time do we have a course, or is it, you know, that it's brought up that, oh, this is something that, you know, your relationship with self is something that you need to nurture.
Yeah.
So one is that it's people just don't realize that it's an option.
That leads me back to you trying to take the selfish out of that. It leads me back to my school days with the nuns, like, you think you love yourself. You think that you're the only one, and they have the ruler or the pointer in their hand, and they're slapping the desk, and
it scares the crap out of you too, and it scares all the
exactly,
and all the rest of the students too.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Well, and that's just it, because a lot of times when people think of, you know, either having a relationship with yourself, or even when you hear the word self-care, a lot of times people will one think, well, that's a luxury. You know, you can only, you know, the regular person doesn't have time for that. Or there is this, yeah, like, how, what, you're so full of yourself. Like, how, you know, you're saying that you love yourself and you're thinking that then it becomes, they put it on you like it's an ego thing, which it isn't. You know, when you're looking at what the ego is all about, it's, oh, what can I get? What can I, you know, take away from somebody else to make me look better? Mm-hmm. That's not what self-care and self-love is about. It is about essentially filling your own tank, so to speak, so that you're able to actually give more to other people.
Yeah. I mean, that's an important point. Sometimes do you think people actually get it or no?
In time they do, mm-hmm. But it's a process. As I look at some of the clients that I've worked with, and they've had, I mean, it feels foreign. It feels almost painful because there's a lot of guilt and shame about doing it, because they think that they're taking away time from their loved ones to be able to take care of themselves. But it's a shifting of the mindset to know that if you don't take care of yourself and the things that you need, you're no good to anybody. You know, when you are stressed, overwhelmed, burned out, and running on fumes, you know, doing that whole proverbial candle at both ends, you're no good to the people around you. And how is that nurturing those relationships?
Yeah.
And a lot of times I like to bring it to the analogy as well of when we're on a plane. You know, when they're doing the safety check and everything before takeoff, and they're talking about the oxygen masks, the first thing they say is you need to put yours on first before you put on anybody else's, including your children.
Right. Yeah.
And so, and we don't question that. Oh, I have to take care of myself and before I can help anybody else. But outside of a plane, a lot of times we don't see that that needs to apply to all of our lives in every aspect. Mm-hmm. And it's not selfish to take care of yourself. It is the greatest expression of love for yourself to take care of you. And like I say, you are then healthier in every way possible to take care of your loved ones. That way you are giving your time, your effort, your love to them from a place of abundance instead of a place that's now going to be a detriment to you.
You know, you bring up a, I'm going to use myself as an example for a second here. Mm-hmm. One of my exes, she absolutely drained me, and I hadn't even realized that she had drained me because I was so busy taking care of her. I just totally forgot about refilling myself and refilling the tanks in order to keep helping her. The relationship ended very badly and everything, but part of my responsibility in that is the fact that at the end of the relationship, she said that you're just being selfish. It became all about you when I was trying to see it as I was trying to help her and all that kind of stuff, but because I hadn't been taking care of myself, I just kept falling away from it, and she never received she never felt like she received any of the help I was trying to give her to begin with.
Well, there's a lot of different things in what you just said there. You know, two couple of sentences, but there's a lot of different things at play there.
Yeah.
One of the big things that I hear in that is your, and there's a, I don't know if anyone has read the book by Gary Chapman called The Five Love Languages, mm-hmm. but you guys were speaking two different languages.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And if there's one thing that people want to just do that will enhance their relationships to the nth degree is learn what your love language is and learn what your partner's love language is. Mm-hmm. They may be the same. They may be different. But if you know what they are, well, actually, let me back up. If you don't know what they are, like yourself, like you, I'm going to guess that for you, that your love language is acts of service. You love doing things for other people. That's how you show your love.
Okay, we'll give away a little secret that Sheila and I have known each other for about 5 years now. So
yes.
she's very right.
Yeah, there you go. But even in just hearing what you said, I could have picked that. But yes, but hers, not knowing her at all, I'm going to say that hers was not that language. So she was not receiving it. Mm-hmm. If you knew what hers were, like say hers was just, I'm going to think now, say personal touch was her love language.
Okay.
In your doing things for her, if you were like always just, you know, touching her on the shoulder or giving her hugs all the time, and, or, you know, just having those little moments of touching, even just, you know, sending her text during the day. So you can have that electronic touch. That maybe was what was missing, and then she would have received your love. And when you people are speaking those two different languages, yeah, you say you are doing everything possible that you can think of, but it's not being received on the other end. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. That's one part that could have been happening. Another part that could have been happening is in going back to the idea of self-love. If you don't have a certain level of relationship with yourself and you don't love yourself, you don't have an ability to accept love from other people because you don't think you're worthy of it.
Mm.
And a lot of times that's when people will throw, like if a person is in that position because they don't realize that they're putting up this wall to love because they may not think that they're not consciously aware that they have this feeling of not being worthy of it. That's when they push it on that it's all on you. Like what you're doing wrong. You don't really love me. If you really loved me, you'd be doing this.
Right.
So we put it back onto the other person. The one of the great things about relationships, and this is where, you know, whether they are long-term, short-term, whatever they are, people come into our lives for a reason. And a lot of time there's a lesson in it. And they reflect something back to us that we need to learn. So you were trying to love this person.
Right.
But she was reflecting back, like she was, pushing that away. But you were there to, in a way, to teach her that she needs to love herself. But she couldn't see that. Mm-hmm. So then that's why she pushed it back on you. And there was all the tension and everything that's happening.
Right.
But it, you know, had she'd been able to see that, she was like, oh, okay, maybe if I start actually working on this relationship with myself, then I can accept it. So like I say, there's many different levels of things that could have been happening. Mm-hmm. And well, there's another level of which I don't know if we really want to go there on that one.
Okay.
But
we'll hold that for a second.
Yeah.
Let me do another promo and
yes.
We'll be right back.
Sure.
You're listening to Community Living Radio here on the NCRA Networks and broadcasting live from UBC at CITR 101.9 FM. We'll be right back. Oh, well, we seem to be having technical difficulties with the promos, but that's okay. We'll just go back to Sheila.
Well, I've had so many technical difficulties with in the last probably couple of weeks with a project I was working on. I'm not surprised.
So, yeah, well, it happens.
Yes.
They have a couple of notes around here that some of the things weren't working or whatever. So, and promos were one of them. So, hey,
you know,
I tried.
You just go with the flow. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't work. Move on.
Okay. You said there was something else that could have been going on, and you were hesitant to get into it.
Well, it's kind of like the darker side of relationships. And then it could have been when you talk about narcissism. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of that in society, rather it's, I heard a new term the other day, I think what it was, like there's a situational narcissism, or then there's the people who are just full-blown narcissists. And in a case like that, and I'm definitely not saying that this has anything to do with your situation, but when you have when you're looking at a partner relationship, or just a relationship between two people, where the one person is give, mm-hmm. and the other one is, you know, all the take. And you're talking about how they suck so much energy out of you. When there's a term called energy vampires. When you're in an energy vampire type of relationship, a lot of times that means that they're one of the people in that relationship is an empath, and the other person may have some narcissistic tendencies. See, I can't talk today either.
It's like a tongue twister.
It is. It's just not a word I like. So then that's a natural pairing, because anyone who has any sort of narcissistic tendency, they actually look for empaths. And most likely than not, they're the type of people they get into a relationship with, because there is that one that always is the giver and the one that's always the taker.
Hmm. That's interesting thought. Yeah, mm-hmm. we'll continue that for another conversation.
Well, exactly. That's a whole. All of these are different conversations that we could go on for an hour about.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but you know what? I do want to get to, because you have so many nuggets of information for people and everything, and we're winding down to our last 7 minutes before we actually have to get to some announcements and things. What is one of the biggest nuggets you think people should walk away with after being with you?
Well, I had originally had one that I was going to talk about,
okay.
But I came up with a different one last night that just kind of hit me. And it's actually a question. So if I was to ask you to make a list of everything in your life that you love, do you think you could do that?
At this point in my life? Yes, I can.
Yes. Okay. A lot of times people don't have a problem. They'll write down, you know, their hobbies and things, and, you know, their cat and, you know, whatever. Loved everything that they love. Mm-hmm. But the big question is, how long will it take before you put you on that list? Now, when you, a lot of people won't automatically put, oh yes, I love myself, and I'll put that on there. A lot, when I asked that question of some people online here a little while ago, majority of the responses said, I never would have even thought of putting myself on that list. So that's the reason I do what I do, is that I want to wake people up to that fact. You deserve to be on that list. You deserve to be a priority in your own life. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why are you here? So that's one question I say I would like to kind of leave some people with. I would think another one would be, who are you? And for some people, they may go, well, that's not a hard question to answer. But a lot of times when you're asked that question, we right away put down the roles that we play. I'm a great father. You know, I'm a wonderful sister. I'm a great mother. I'm a great spouse. Those are all roles that you play. Who are you outside of that? And I think a lot of people don't, they need to reconnect to who they, their what I would call their true essence. Well, I am a highly supportive person. I am loyal beyond anything. I'm loving. I have a huge heart.
Right.
So I would ask people to make that list. Who are you without using any of your roles? And what is it that you really want out of life? Because a lot of times when you're asked a lot of people that too, they look at, well, somebody else wants this, so maybe I should have that too. It becomes that keeping up with the Joneses kind of term.
Yeah, we do a lot of that.
It's that comparison.
Instead of actually seeing what it looks like for a really good one is that I ask some people when I'm sitting in front of them, they're trying to figure out what their message is going to be for their video or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, the end goal is I just want this to make me wealthy. Mm-hmm. And then I look at them and say, well, what does that look like?
Yes.
And the only thing that they can do is put a dollar and cent part to it, but they can't put the emotional part to it, what yes. the whole entire life looks like, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. And that's what we're trying to get out of them.
Yeah. Because that's one of the biggest questions I've, like, what is success to you? Mm-hmm. We're not talking about what so-and-so thinks success is. You know, because a lot of people think success is a gigantic house, you know, having a couple Lamborghinis in the garage and, you know, being able to do around the world vacations. Okay, well, maybe that is success to some people, but what is it just for you? Define it just for you. Nobody else has to agree with you. If your definition of success is just, I pay my bills on time, I have great successful relationships, I don't have, you know, I have very minimal stress in my life, then awesome, go with it and build that. The outside world doesn't have the right to tell you how to run your life and how you are supposed to define everything for you. This is where, again, we come back to what I said at the beginning. You don't listen to what your internal knowledge is telling you. You mm-hmm. don't have to look to the outside world to give you your answers.
Yeah. That is very true. When we actually start to look into each other, we find a bunch more of those golden moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. We still got another couple minutes here. Oh, good.
Well, if I have another couple minutes, I'll say, can I give people an exercise to do?
Yes.
That'd be fantastic, Sheila.
Okay. Well, one thing I would like, because a coach, when I was working with my coach, something that she had me do, which I thought was weird to begin with, but I see the value in it now, is, you know, a lot of times we make the list of what we want to achieve. Mm-hmm. Make a list of what you've already achieved in your life, things that you're proud of. And this may take some time because, again, we're not used to kind of patting ourselves on the back for things. But go through your life and make a list of all the things that you're like, ooh, I did that. I'm really proud I did that. And I don't care how big or small they are. They just have to have meaning for you. And then put each individual one on a little, you know, those little mini post-it pieces of paper and post them up. Have like kind of like a brag wall. Which if I could show you, mine is just to the right of me right here. I have all my little hot pink post-it notes of all things in my life that I'm proud of. Mm-hmm. And on those days where I'm feeling like crap, that I feel like I've accomplished nothing in my life and I'm a little bit down on myself, I can go and stand in front of that wall and look at all the things that I've put on there and went, you know what? I have done something. life isn't as bad as I'm thinking it is right now. And because we have to give ourselves those little pats on the back. We have to become our own BFF, is what I like to call it. Be your own best friend. Be your own cheerleader.
Yeah.
That's another form of you showing the self-care and self-love to yourself.
Okay. Before we run out of time.
Yes.
Once again, how everybody can get a hold of you. And go ahead. What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Best way, off the website, reigniteyourpurpose.com. There is a contact form in there. If you have any questions or anything you want to say, you can definitely send me a message in that regard. All of my social media links are on there for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and definitely through the podcast that I do weekly. I do a lot of inspirational interviews with people about, they'll either have an amazing story to give people hope, or they will be sharing some great skills that can help you live a better life.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sheila. We need to get to our announcements now. And it's been wonderful talking with you. And we need to find that go-between place between Maple Ridge and White Rock so we can have that coffee.
Exactly, yes. Well, and thank you, Michael, and thank you, Ben. I really enjoyed being here, and I can't believe how time goes by so quickly.
It goes really
whenever
quick,
we
doesn't
are talking.
It? Yeah. Did you say you live in Maple Ridge, Sheila?
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
so does my brother, too. He lives in Maple Ridge as well.
Yeah.
It's an awesome little place.
Yeah, he loves it over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, I'll see you later.
Yes.
And you have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you again.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye, Sheila.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Ben, you have some announcements for us.
I do. But the first one, I got a show on Sunday, March the 5th. I will be playing at good old Fairview Pub. But first, the first band's going to be playing there is called the South Van Big Band. They start at 4:30 till 7:30, and the cover charge there is $10 at the door. And then at 8:30 till 10, which is myself and my friends, it's all by donation, and it's going to be at 898 West Broadway. And the band that's going to be playing there with me is Rio Samaya. As soon as I finish all these announcements, we're going to play that song for you guys as well. And then on Tuesday, March the 21st, at Fairview Pub, is the John Pippas Band, and they're playing from 8 until midnight. It's all by donation. For more info, look at fairviewpub.ca. Once again, fairviewpub.ca.
Cool. So we got some, June 12th. We're going to start the 5 Mile Wellspring and myself. We're
right.
going to be heading back towards Banff. This time is the week-long road trip. We are not walking the whole distance this
Thank
time.
Thank God.
It should prove to be pretty fun. We're just going to try to reignite some of those flames that were started last year. You know, the mayors, the MLAs, and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Have you spoken to the mayor about in Banff at all yet, or
the mayor in Canmore? We have the mayor in Banff. He wasn't available for us the first time around, so we don't know if he's going to be available this time at all. But it should prove to be pretty fun. We'll have a good time.
It's going to be good.
Yeah.
I wish you guys all the luck.
Yeah. So, yep. And for those who are out in White Rock, we do have an upcoming a fundraiser out there at the Sawbucks Pub at 16th and 152. Yeah, it's right across from the Semiamu Mall. So,
that's way up there. So what's the date for that one?
The fundraiser?
Yeah.
That's still pending. I will be posting that as soon as I get it from Cheryl on our Facebook page. Yep. And for Sheila, please do go to our Facebook page, Community Living Radio on Facebook. And I have actually put her website up there.